Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Morbid early and ad-free. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Hey guys, I have to tell you about this all-in-one shake that I'm freaking loving. It's called Cachava. I love saying it. It's actually hands down the best thing that I've found to help me get all my essential nutrients into one day. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics. In other words, literally everything that your body craves to feel your best. And I know what you're thinking. Something that good for me cannot possibly taste good. Wrong. That's where Cachava really earns their over 52,000 five-star reviews. It actually tastes freaking amazing. It's very creamy and smooth, and it comes together with just water. And it comes in five delicious flavors. Personally, vanilla and chai are my personal favorites, but it also comes in chocolate, matcha, and coconut acai, which I still need to try. Some people like to drink it as part of a healthy breakfast or lunch, and other people love it as a protein-packed snack before or after a workout. It's really perfect for that because it has 25 grams of plant protein per serving. Personally, I like to add mine to my overnight oats. I add a scoop and I mix it all up to get a little more protein into my oats. And literally, I can have that for breakfast and feel satiated, nourished, beautiful, functioning, all throughout my day. It's incredible. Please send me more of it because I love it so much. It makes me feel very, very good. And guess what, guys? Cachava is offering our listeners 10% off for a limited time. Just go to cachava.com/morbid, spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/morbid. Are you the kind of person who loves a touch-up on the go, or maybe you're a full glam while in the carpool kind of human? Maybe there's no time for a full face in the morning between kids, pets, work, all of that. Maybe you woke up late. Well, Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation is perfect for those moments when life moves fast. I absolutely love this foundation because it doesn't settle into any fine lines or wrinkles, and you can just toss this thing in your purse. You say, oh my gosh, I have a little smudge right here. Let me fix it really quick. It's perfect. And it's now in 16 shades. It offers SPF 20, which like that's amazing. It's got moisturizing pro vitamin B5. And I love the applicator. It's a blurring sponge. So you can just tap, tap, tap it to reset your foundation and you are good. Shop Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
Hey weirdos, I'm Elena.
I'm Ash.
And this is Morbid.
And we're sitting closer to each other than
we
usual.
Are.
I'm like,
we
hi. Are.
I'm like, hey.
Don't touch me, though.
We can high five if we want.
Here you go.
We can fist bump.
Oh, no, that's a
I have a big ring. Yeah. I'm sorry. There we go.
Big cocktail ring was about to fuck up my knuckles. Usually I have like rings on every finger,
I know.
Too.
I just have that one ring that I've got for like, it's one of those rings that
Etsy?
I saw on like TikTok.
Wait, is it one of them that, like, come in a candle?
No. It didn't come in a candle, but it was, I think it's, like, Jumanji or something like that.
That's fine.
It's cool. They have cute rings, and they're, like, pretty cheap.
That's fine. Oh!
And it didn't turn my finger green, so.
I got us a present that is a ring, but I'm not going to tell you what kind it is.
Oh, I'm excited.
I got it on Etsy.
Did you get one for everyone else?
No.
Sorry.
What?
Sorry, guys.
Oh! I was like, what? No?
No.
I was like, who's everyone?
All of them.
Yeah, guys, check your mail. I got you a ring.
I got you a ring.
You guys want to marry me?
Who doesn't?
I probably someone. Probably someone from my past that was like, dodge that bullet.
Oh, yeah. Trust me. I got a couple of those, too. They're like, welp.
Guys, it's because we always have to tell you the time of the day. It's morbid at night, if you couldn't tell.
You can always tell the difference.
Late night Ash and Elena. My voice sounds a little different in the morning.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's the end of the week. We are catching up with ourselves. We're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit this coming week, and we're excited about it. So we won't be like scrambling to get episodes out in time. So get ready.
It's going to be great, guys. Get ready. You're going to see a lot more of us.
Yeah, we're feeling good.
Not going anywhere.
So this was originally going to be a one part, and I was like, oh, fun case. Like, cool. I'm going to do that for one episode.
Okay.
And then I did what I do, and I looked, and I was like, oh.
It's probably going to be eight parts.
I can make this an entire season, so.
Season 82 of Morbid.
So this story is often referred to as the impossible murder.
Oh.
Sorry, I had to clear my throat. Let me clear my throat.
You don't even know how excited you just made me.
So this is the impossible murder. It's been covered by a ton of like TV shows and movies, and people have been hemming and hawing and trying to figure this mystery out for decades.
That's weird because I never heard of it.
For decades.
But yes.
I have heard of it, but I never looked super into it. Now that I have, I'm like, I get it.
Okay.
I totally get it.
All right.
I don't get what happened.
No.
But I get it. I get the fascination. What are you looking at?
I was trying to figure out which knob was mine because I was going to turn down my headphones without asking you to.
She keeps looking. It's like, what? What is crawling up the side of my chair that you're looking at and don't want to tell me?
No, I was actually just trying not to interrupt the podcast to ask you an annoying question, but I guess you're going to make me... can you turn my headphones down?
Yes, I can.
Just a smidgen.
Just a smidgen.
Sometimes, that's so much better. Sometimes I ask Alina to turn down my headphones and she pretends that she does and she doesn't. And I'll go, that's better. And she's like, I didn't change it.
I do that so much.
But you did now.
But I did do it this time. You saw that.
Yeah.
Right.
That's like so much better. Okay, thank you. We were like screaming in my ears.
Here you are. Here you are, guys.
Sorry to interrupt.
So this takes place in England. So hello, England.
Hello.
Oh, boy. That wasn't me. I just want you to know that. Ash really took it back. So, again, it's a weird night.
It's Easter.
It's Easter.
I didn't even... Oh, I had a brownie. Not... What? No, like, I was going to say, I didn't eat a lot of candy. Like, I don't know why I'm so hyper. And then I was like, oh, I had a brownie.
I didn't know what that was. I was like, what is the connection?
And, like, a regular brownie before anybody tweets at me.
Yeah, just a regular brownie.
Yeah, there's kids.
There's kids, yeah.
It's fucking kids, man.
All right, so we're going to talk about...
Are we?
We're going to talk about a man named William Herbert Wallace. Yes, William Wallace.
Oh,
not
shit.
The same William Wallace from Braveheart.
Braveheart.
But a William Wallace.
William Herbert Wallace.
You know, I'm saying. And he was 52 years old.
All right.
He was born August. You said that like I accused you. I was like, he was 52 years old. You were like, all right. Shit. I believe you.
Should we podcast right now?
We should. I feel like, with this and the last listener tales, I feel like we're killing it.
All right. I always worry that, like, my giggling is going to annoy.
I like your giggling.
Oh, my God. Thanks, Mom.
You're welcome. So he was born on August 29th, 1878.
Okay.
And he lived in Anfield.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Pause.
Yeah.
Anfield.
Wow, it's like Jeeves took over your body.
It did. Ask Jeeves.
You know, I think somebody like described it in more detail on Twitter, and I was like, I actually think I do remember that.
I don't know.
All right. maybe I don't.
So, I don't know.
So William.
All right. So William. So Anfield. Yep. Right. That, yep. I didn't just forget that.
Honestly, I have no recollections.
All right. He was a Prudential Assurance Company employee. So he sold insurance.
Okay.
He had done a ton of jobs growing up, and he had actually landed this job because his dad got him this job. It wasn't what he really wanted to do.
Mm-mm.
But he did it, and he did it well, and it did him well. You know, that sounds dirty, but it wasn't.
It did
dirty.
Him well. It just it didn't really sound that dirty.
Maybe I just made it that way. But William was known to dress like very fancy.
Well, yeah, you're selling insurance. You got to look the part of insurance.
Well, and he kind of like he went with like the old fashioned look. Like he liked to have a bowler hat. He had like the raglan shirt, and he was always dressed in a a dapper, dapper blazer.
Oh, I love a dapper, dapper blazer.
Yeah, and I imagine he always had, like, a pocket watch somewhere or visible.
Like, even just, like, a flowered pocket square.
Yeah.
Very, very Carson Kressley.
Exactly. That's exactly how I would describe him.
I mean.
He was tall, he was slim, and he looked kind of like what we all think Jack the Ripper looks like, almost.
Did he have a mustache?
He had a mustache, and that's not a commentary on whether he's guilty of this crime or not, that he looked like Jack the Ripper, but I'm just saying.
Okay.
But he loved to play the violin, and he would play the violin while his wife Julia played the piano.
Bitch. Yeah. Love.
Seems adorable to me. I'm just saying.
So I want to say so scenic, but that's not the right thing to say. I meant wholesome.
So scenic.
So scenic, so wholesome.
And they would often have people over to their home, their flat in England. And they would play together. They would like duet music.
Put on a show.
Put on a little show. A little number.
A little, you know, a little folk number.
Unfortunately, he was sick a lot. Okay. He had a lot of kidney issues. At one point, he had gone on a business trip, I believe, to India. And while he was there, he ended up having like severe kidney issues.
Oh, no.
He ended up having one kidney removed. And the other kidney like never really picked up the slack. So he had a lot of issues throughout his life with the kidneys.
Kidney issues, I feel like, must hurt a lot because you've had a kidney infection. Oh my God.
Kidney infections hurt so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And they're real bad. They make you so sick.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I feel for him. So he was married to a woman named Julia.
Yes.
Julia's maiden name was Julia Dennis. She was born April 28th, 1861. Now, this would, remember, he was 52. This would make her 69 when she died. The only reason I point that out is because her gravestone says that she was 52 when she died.
Oh, that's weird.
Even weirder, she married William in 1914, and the marriage certificate says she was 37, but she was 53 in real life.
Oh.
So her gravestone shows her as being 1 year younger than she was when she actually married William. She was lying about 17 years.
What?
She was literally saying that she was 17 years younger than she actually was.
Oh. What a bad bitch.
And there's like so many, anytime I've read anything, people are like, I cannot figure out why.
Or if she didn't want to age.
Or if William knew. Which it doesn't seem like he did, because on her gravestone,
he would have had it say the correct thing.
And it's like, she wrote that she was 37 when they got married, and she was 52.
She was 52 when they got married.
Yeah.
Wow.
17 years older than what she was actually saying she was.
She must have looked great.
It's bonkers to me.
Botox before Botox.
Botox before Botox. Well, the thing was, she was having a lot of ailments as well. Like, she was always sick as well,
but she was old
because she was 17 years older than
Yeah.
him. But it's just really weird. I don't understand. And the thing is, like, William wasn't understanding why she was sick all the time.
So he didn't know that she was old.
Well, that's why I assume he didn't know her real age.
Yeah. That's what it sounds like to me.
That's a pretty big secret to hide from your literal partner for life.
Maybe she thought at some point she would start, like, Benjamin Buttoning it.
Maybe. She didn't, unfortunately.
Maybe she thought that she was going to find the Fountain of Youth, like, in Tuck Everlasting.
There you go.
Deep cut.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I think that's what she was thinking.
You can't rule it out.
In 1931.
You don't know.
Yeah. Well, either way, she was described as gentle, shy at times, brilliant, artistic, well-kept. She was also raised, pretty well-to-do, and it showed. They lived a modest life, but they had money. They had
enough money. They were comfortable.
Yeah, they were definitely comfortable. And in a time when a lot of people were not comfortable, like, hello, Great Depression.
Yeah. Did they, like, not live beyond their means?
I don't think they did. It didn't seem like they did.
It's the best thing you can do.
And she dressed very prim and proper like her husband. And she also dressed old-fashioned like her husband and kind of eccentric.
Well, also because she was old.
Well, I was just going to say, but was it really old-fashioned? It was kind of from her era. to be real. So I think, like, people were like, wow, you're dressing so much older for your age. And she's like,
huh. She's like, I'm just so proper.
On you. I'm almost 2 decades older than I'm saying I am.
Getting away with that.
Like, it's one thing to be like, oh.
That would be like me. No, I'm not even shitting you right now. That would be like me saying I was 4 years old right now. Hi, I'm 4. Like, that would be a problem. I'd be the orphan. You know?
I do know.
That would be like you saying that you were 14.
Yeah.
That was quick-ass math.
That was, because I was like, I'm not doing that.
Or no, you'd be 15, actually. Sorry.
That works. But honestly, it makes sense if I was like, you know, hey, I'm 30.
Yeah.
Like, that makes sense.
Honestly, like, you could probably trick someone into thinking that you were 15. Now, the more I think about it.
I don't think. And no, well,
there's been times where you get I get carded and you don't.
Or the other way around.
No, I get carded and you don't.
But that would mean that you're, like, young looking and I'm not. If you're getting carded, that
means other way around. I was really, I was like, no. You were so, I said what I said.
You were so confident. I was like, no. Do I let this go? Or do I fight?
Fight to the death. Finish him. Bully Ash.
Oh, either way.
Yeah, but there, you
Julia was, she was, I don't know. I don't know what it is. You look at a picture of her and you're like, get it, Julia. Get
yeah,
it.
Was she pretty?
She was, and she was eccentric. She just, like, didn't give a fuck when it came to that.
I'm obsessed with Julia. With her.
She knew several languages. She was a painter. She loved literature, music, obviously, her and her hubby there. She just liked to learn and experience things.
That's awesome.
But she was also kind of shy, so she didn't like, social things kind of freaked her out a little bit, which, like, I get it.
She kind of sounds a lot like you, other than lying about her age part.
I'm like, Julia, you and me.
Well, you don't dress old either.
I try not to.
I think she just sounded smart, so I was saying that you're smart.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She sounded pretty cool, though, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, but, you. Like I said, shit was definitely rough at this time because, you know, like, that large depression.
The great one.
But that really great one.
Massive
that really
depression.
Great one. But again, he had a good job as an insurance salesman. And together they had their flat. I think it was like a 3-bedroom flat. Like Hitch. It was a nice place. Like she had a room in the flat that was like just for her like handbags and hats.
Goals.
Yeah. I was like, wow, that's great.
She had a walk-in closet before there were walk-in closets.
There you go. Now, what's weird is the conflicting ideas of what people say about them as a married couple.
Okay.
Now, some people will say that they were very happy. They seemed very normal together as a couple. Others describe their marriage as like kind of cold.
Haters.
And like tension filled. That's what I'm saying. It's weird. So the age thing kind of is like weird later on too. Because like if you're lying about 17 years, what else are you lying about?
Oh yeah.
Like that's a big lie.
I want to know why she was lying.
And no one can figure it out.
Do you think it's because she like loved him so much and she didn't think that he would want to marry an older woman?
Which like that's sad.
Yeah.
But then there were people that later said that it seemed like she thought she like kind of married down.
Well, she because she was like well-to-do.
Yeah, so I think I don't know. It's well, maybe she really makes sense.
Maybe it was like what I said. Like she lied because she really wanted to marry him, and then maybe she realized that it wasn't what she wanted. But you couldn't get divorced back then.
Maybe.
So maybe I don't know. The marriage and the love fizzled out
because like
or maybe people were lying.
Well, people around them would say different things, but like their neighbors, the Johnsons, who figure very heavily into this story.
Okay.
They were around them all the time, and they said like they were very affectionate with each other, like a normal affectionate couple.
Yeah.
Like not over the top, but. By no means were they cold with one another.
Well, I believe the Johnsons.
I believe the Johnsons, to be honest.
I don't know on what basis, but I believe them.
But with the age thing and how she lied about that, later we will see that William was asked whether his wife had her own money stashed in the house at all. Or, like, do you know if she had her own money? And he said he didn't know if she had her own money. And if she did, he didn't know where it was. And okay. I was like...
That's a weird question.
Huh. But I was like, that's weird that, like... You wouldn't know
yeah.
if she had her own money. You know what I mean? Because, like, back then, it's not like she was, like, going off to work. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you don't know if she did. Like, that, to me, says there was more secrets in this marriage than they were letting on.
Well, unless they were like, oh, did she, like, hide money? And he was like, I don't know. Like, I don't think so.
And he's like, I don't know. Like, maybe.
Maybe he's like, I never thought about it. Like, I don't know.
It just seems like it was, like, one of those things that they are definitely...
It's weird.
...hiding more from each other than a normal... Or like a seemingly normal couple, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's strange.
Just strange. And especially now, after you hear the case, you're like, huh, that's a little weird.
Okay.
So one other thing that was just interesting to me is like, they're like me and John because she was 5'2 and he was 6'2.
Oh, shit.
So she was very short and he was very tall.
I like that you gave yourself a couple extra inches there.
I gave me a couple of extra inches and I took an inch away from him. Because John is 6'3 and I am 5'1.5.
You're 5.
So they would also, like I said, they were both pretty sickly.
Yeah.
But what was funny is people would say that they would, like, switch off ailments. Like, they were, one of them was always sick.
I think that's, like, a phenomenon.
Well, this was more... This wasn't one of those things like, oh, like, I get the cold and then he gets the cold.
Well, that just makes sense.
One of them would be down and out, sick in bed for a week. And then when that one was better, immediately she would get sick and down and out in bed with something different.
Yeah, that's weird.
And what people said was it wasn't one of this, like, oh, funny things. It was like a competition almost. Like, I'm sicker than you.
Do you think one of them had, like, Munchausen's?
I don't think so. I mean, because William was definitely sickly. Like, he had
the kidneys, yeah.
Yeah, like, the kidney thing really probably would take him out a lot. Do you think
she was, like, competing with him?
And I think she was actually, what we will find out later, she had a lot more ailments than, real ailments than people were letting on, too.
All right.
But it's just, people were saying, like, they were just always sick, and it seemed like they were always, like, people kept describing it as a tit for tat with sicknesses. Which is
very weird.
Yeah. And actually, William kept a diary, which figures heavily into the court case later.
Oh, fun.
They really go into it. And he would say sometimes, like, he was kind of annoyed with how she was always sick.
Well, because even when you're getting over it, like, even when he wasn't sick anymore and it was her turn, he was probably still getting over it. So he's probably like, I don't want to fucking take care of you right now.
And it just is one of those things where you're like, can you just, like...
Give me a minute.
Just give me a minute.
Let me have my sick time.
No, I have to take care of you.
Yeah.
But they did have a housekeeper that came by the house every Wednesday. Her name was Sarah.
All right.
She commented later that it did seem like William was not happy, like I said, being an insurance salesman. He felt kind of saddled with the gig, and he was making money at it. It was fine. It was good work. But he really loved and wanted to pursue science full-time.
Oh.
And we'll see that later. I'll explain it. And he couldn't, and I think it was kind of depressing him. Like, yeah. He did say in his diary that, you know, they pored over, that he said he would feel depressed at times and down and, like, not happy with his life. But then he would, you know, gush about his wife sometimes. He would talk about how much he loved her, cared for her. And then other times he would be like, she's really annoying and sick all the time.
It's kind of like,
So it's like a normal stream of consciousness, I think, for somebody going through a lot of shit.
Yeah.
Because it's not like this is, like, a very constant economical, you know, like, there's nothing that's comfortable right now.
No.
Because everything was in flux. So it's like,
not only is, like, the economy in flux, but, like, their health is in flux. Maybe their love situation is in flux. Yeah.
It just seems like there's a lot going on, and he's not happy about his job, but he still has a job.
So I'm sure he has, like, good days and bad days.
Yeah. So it sucks.
Yeah.
So that's who they are as people.
All right. Now where are we headed?
Let's take you to January 19th, 1931.
All right. Let's go.
Now we're going to take you to the Central Chess Club at City Cafe on North John Street. Chess is, like, kind of a big thing in this case, which is interesting.
Weird.
Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the best-selling true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu. It was almost the perfect crime. Stacks of cold, hard cash sitting on the table, unguarded. Who wouldn't be tempted to slowly reach their hand out and steal? A pile of Monopoly money from the banker. Monopoly is one of those games that can bring out our most devious selves, and Monopoly Go takes that gleeful mischievousness to your phone in a wildly popular twist on the classic that you can play anywhere, anytime. Collect rent from friends on iconic properties, bankrupt them by pulling a heist on their vault, even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with friends to unlock big prizes and try to top the leaderboards. Whether you're helping out your friends or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is an absolute blast. Go download it now free on the App Store or Google Play.
So, William did join a chess club. He was part of a chess club for a while, and it was literally like they would meet like two times a week, and they would all like play against each other. You had like matches. They would have tournaments. It was like a thing, and it, you know, keeps your mind working.
That sounds cool. You know? Do you know how to play chess?
I don't. I used to know very loosely how to play chess.
I have not even the vaguest.
I've actually always wanted to like sit down and really learn chess.
Maybe we should do that.
We should do it together.
Yeah.
I feel like it's such a good mind workout.
I don't even give a fuck about that. I just want to say checkmate. And like, and then
I don't even want to play. I just want to say checkmate.
No, I want to play. And I want to throw the board when I win at the end.
I love that. Like overturn it.
Yeah.
Just flip it up.
Like Teresa.
I would love to get a really beautiful chess set.
Oh, yes.
But I don't want to be one of those people that has one and doesn't know how to play chess. I need to know how to play chess first.
Yeah, like, that'd be stupid.
I want to earn my beautiful chess set.
Oh, and you could get like really like pieces.
Really, like cool gothic
pieces.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like a gothic castle chess set.
Yes.
That's all I want.
Or we could get one of those giant ones like in Harry Potter and we could explode at the end if we lost.
And there we are as people.
Yeah.
That right there.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's why I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
So Captain Samuel Beatty.
That guy.
He is the guy that he would run the chess club.
He sounds like he would.
Yeah. And he was a cool guy. He's the guy that originally gets a phone message this night, January 19th, 1931, which is for William Wallace at the chess club before he arrived. And it set this whole thing into motion.
All right.
So we're going to see.
Sam.
Now, Samuel Beatty, according to The Killing of Julia Wallace by Jonathan Goodman. Yes, she dies. Spoiler alert. The Killing of Julia Wallace is a great book. They go into like massive detail about every single second of this case, and I could not put it down, so I highly recommend it.
Kindle?
It is on Kindle.
All right.
So go get it, guys.
All right.
They said that Beatty would come straight from work and go to the cafe on Mondays and Thursdays to set the chess club up. Mm-hmm. He knew William Wallace for about 8 years. They were very friendly. They played chess together a lot. You know, all that fun stuff.
At the chess club? Whoa.
He said he was a very nice man.
Aww.
Like, very nice. At most, I could not find anybody that was like, William Wallace was a dick. Or anything less than like, he was so pleasant.
He doesn't really sound like a dick.
He seemed like a nice guy.
Yeah.
He did say that he could be a little flaky. And he said because he was sick a lot.
Same.
Well, he said he's sick a lot, so he doesn't show up for matches. He's at chess club 1 week. He's not there for 3 weeks.
That's not flaky. That's just somebody going through illness.
Yeah, and I think he also was just like, he just wouldn't show up sometimes. Like, he was just kind of like, whatever.
I feel that so hard.
But he didn't hold it against him. But he said he did only show up here and there for chess club. He was definitely not, like, a regularly attending person. He hadn't been there since December at this point in January 19th. So he had once told them that he just didn't like leaving his wife at home at night alone.
Bitch.
Which, like, my heart.
The deeper we're getting into this, this is starting to sound familiar to me.
Is it?
Yeah.
Look at that. Well, around 7:20 p.m. on January 19th, the waitress at the City Cafe named Gladys Harley.
Of course.
She answered the phone. Gladys. I don't know why I felt it.
What the fuck was that?
I just feel like
did someone in your body just come out for a second?
I feel like
sorry, that was Patricia.
Even in England, I feel like she's like, hey, it's Gladys.
I don't think so.
I just feel that.
Even your whole entire face. That was honestly a little scary.
Oh, guys.
Okay, okay.
Oh, guys. Okay. Sorry, I had a possession moment.
I almost
Gladys took over my body.
I almost left.
Well, Gladys answered the phone.
Hey, it's Gladys.
Gladys. We took a breather to collect ourselves, and I'm ready to talk about Gladys, everybody. I'm ready to talk about her.
Gladys.
She answered the phone, and it was the operator who was telling her, someone's on the line for you.
Whoa, what the fuck is that all about?
And she waited, because that's what you do in 1931. You wait.
Wait.
And she just heard a couple of voices on the other end. And she said, she was like, it sounded like they were just talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So she was like, do you need something? Can I help you? Because Gladys is not fucking around.
She's got waiting to do.
She doesn't have time for this. So she heard a man's voice. And she said it sounded kind of like a little fancy, a little upper crusty, you know?
Crusty.
And it was asking if she was on the line with the Central Chess Club. And then so she was like, yes, I am. And this person said, is Mr. Wallace there? And she was like, I don't really know who that is. So she was like, I will ask. Because she was waitressing there, but she didn't know everybody's names.
Yeah.
So that came in for the chess club. So she went to Beatty and she asked him. And he said that Wallace wasn't there yet, but he was due to play a match later that night. So he was expecting him to show up, but he told her, you know what? I'll just talk to the guy on the phone for you and see what he wants.
Yeah.
He was like, why should you relay all this? So he tells the guy, hi, Wallace isn't here, but he may be arriving shortly, but it's kind of a crapshoot because, like, Wallace, am I right? And so the guy on the other end says, can you give him a message for me? And he's like, sure. So he says, can you tell him to call me tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. and or come see me tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. at 25 Men Love Gardens East.
Men Love Gardens.
Men Love Gardens East. So he said, it's business related, it's insurance related, he'll know what it means. So he's like, sure, dude, what's your name? And I bet that's what he said.
Yeah.
And he says,
sure, it's dude, what's your name?
What's your name? And he says, it's R.M. Qualtro.
No, it's not.
Yeah, Qualtra. Qualtra, that's what it is. And he wrote it down for him because he was like, how the fuck do you spell Qualtra? I was trying to be fancy and I was like, fuck. That's what he said. How the fuck do you spell that? I can't think of any other fancy name. That's the only word I could come up
with. How on God's green earth do you spell that?
So Qualtra. So he wrote it down for him and that was that.
Sure.
The call came right before Wallace arrived, because he arrived right after that.
Weird timing.
A little bit. He had apparently been recovering from the flu. He said he had the flu the week before.
Oh, man.
And he said Julia, his wife, had also been recovering from a nasty cold.
Oh, Julia.
So when Wallace got there, he started catching up on some matches with other players, and because he's so flaky, he was kind of behind, and there are rules that you have to, like, do so many matches to get into a tournament, so he was trying to get his shit together. You know what I mean, man?
Yeah.
He's playing chess, and Beatty comes and tells him about this Qualtra call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably saying the name wrong, but I don't know.
Q.
Q-U-A-L-T-R-O-U-G-H. Qualtra.
Or Qualtro.
Qualtro. Either one. He doesn't exist. Spoiler alert, so it doesn't matter.
I kind of felt like he didn't.
So he's like... What? Qualtro? Qualtra? What is that? He was like, I don't know anyone named that. And he was like, I've never even heard that name.
Yeah, it's weird.
But he's like, well, he wants you to meet him or call him tomorrow. And he gives him all the information. So he made it clear. Wallace made it clear right there. He was like, I don't know this address. I've never heard of this address. I don't know this guy.
It sounds made up, all of
it. Yeah. Like, he was like, this whole thing is weird. So after the matches, he walked and took the tram with a couple of the other men from the club, and he walked home partially with a very good friend of his and a fellow chess player named James Caird, who said they spoke about the mystery caller,
mm-hmm.
like, as they walked home. And he said Wallace was genuinely confused by this person.
Yeah.
And said he had never heard of him, and he said, what a funny-sounding name.
Yeah.
Like, he was genuinely like, what the fuck? Like, why was he calling me at chess club? It's weird.
Well, that's the thing, because it's like, can you have him call me? And it's like, well, then he has a phone, so...
Well, that's why, and by all accounts that talked to him that night, he did seem genuinely like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So there's that. But a weird little tidbit about the street that Julia and William lived on. It was Wolverton Street, and according to that book, The Killing of Julia Wallace, and a couple of other articles I read, it had a lot of death attached to it.
Oh.
Like, weirdly cursed? So. Almost cursed. People would say it was cursed, and I kind of believe them.
Fuck that.
So in the year before Julia's death, 3 people had killed themselves on the street. 5 women lost their husbands in weird, like, tragic accidents. Ways.
Oh, that's weird.
Another person who lived on the street died while watching a soccer match, and another fell to their death on vacation off a building.
In England, that would actually be a football match.
I almost said a football match, but then I was like, no, it's soccer here. So I'm just going to stay in my lane. Football. But yeah, you would say football.
Football.
I don't know what. I was like, football.
Kind of sounded like you said fupa.
Football. Football match. You know, a football match over there, a soccer match over here. You all get it. So lots of people dying on the street is the moral of that story.
Hey.
So again, people were thinking it was cursed. So on top of this, on top of all that gnarly situation, there was a creep. And he was creeping on this street. During this time, there was a guy or a gal referred to as the Anfield Housebreaker.
Bitch.
And he had
could it break your house?
he's going to break the shit out of your house. And he had broken into upwards of 30 homes recently in the area.
Dang.
He was, and I'm saying he because I'm just generalizing here. He would usually do it when no one was home. But the strange thing about this is they used a key, whoever it was.
Are they like apartment buildings?
No, these are like flats. Like, does actually that mean like homes? Okay. Yeah. And either he would either use a key that was copied,
mm-hmm.
or they thought maybe like a skeleton key that he could get into everywhere.
That's spooky.
And they didn't catch him.
Oh man.
Or them, whoever it was, because we don't know.
Never.
Yeah. We have no idea.
Maybe it was Qualtrol.
And this was all happening as this is going on. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, that night he had dinner with Julia at home. Julia had made a nice dinner. All was well that evening. She was like getting over this cold. She still wasn't feeling that great.
Mm.
Apparently, though, she was upset because her black cat was missing.
No, yeah. I'm not even talking about it.
Yeah. Nothing bad happens to the cat, so don't worry.
No, I know. It's just like my worst fear is losing Franklin or Lux.
Yeah,
I think about it every day.
I feel that. So that was that night. The next day, January 20th, 1931, Wallace worked all day. He would go around collecting insurance payments all around the area. It was like a very tiring job.
I was going to say, sounds like bullshit.
Yeah. And at lunch, he would come home and he had lunch with Julia. And then he did a little bit of work on his own. Because, like I said, he loved science. This is when it comes back. He had a very big interest in science, particularly biology and chemistry. His prized possession was a microscope that he spent a pretty penny on, but he had once actually tried to build his own microscope.
Damn!
Yeah, like, what a badass. He had actually gone to school early on for science. He had gone to technical school, and after he got his certificates in biology, chemistry, and I think electrical science? Yeah. He went on to become a part-time professor of sorts at the Liverpool Technical College.
Wow! Yeah. I wonder why he stopped.
I think because he just needed more. He needed the money.
More money.
I think it was really just like trying to make ends meet. He spent about an hour there doing some experimenting in his makeshift lab.
So
that
cute.
He made in one of the like the three bedrooms.
She had a hat room. He had a microscope lab. Room.
I love that. I love it. And then he left again around 3 to get back to his insurance work.
Okay.
Now, sometime before 4, a friend and a client of his named James Rothwell saw him walking, and he noted that he appeared like he had been crying to him.
Wallace looked like he had been crying?
Yeah, and he described him as, quote, haggard and drawn, very distressed looking.
Okay.
Which is interesting. And he was a very good friend of his. Like, he, in a client, he saw him
so
all
he
the
knew
time.
What he would look like usually.
And he said he was, like, wiping his eye with, like, his shirt.
Oh.
So that's Wallace. Interesting. Yeah, it's weird. But then another client, however, said that he was his normal self that day and said she saw him often wiping his eyes or nose with a kerchief because she said he always seemed to have the sniffles or a cold.
Because he was sickly.
Exactly. So I just want to make sure all of these get said because mm-hmm. this is what makes this case nuts.
It's like a he said,
nothing
she said.
Nothing adds up. One person says this, another person says this, and they both make sense. It's
weird.
Like, what is the truth here? So there was actually a boy named Neil Norbury, and he delivered baked goods, and he went to the Wallace home that day while...
why does no one deliver baked goods
I know,
anymore?
Things were so... That sounds so lovely. but this was when William was out doing his insurance thing, and he said that Julia answered the door, and she was very sweet and nice, but she did appear sick to him, like, not feeling well.
And she was just getting over the flu.
Yeah, and I think it was, like, kind of getting, like, it was getting worse almost.
Yeah.
I think she wasn't getting that much better.
Perhaps
so.
Pneumonia?
Perhaps. Now, his last appointment that day was a woman named Margaret Martin, and she was actually going to be ending her insurance policy, so there was, like, a lot of paperwork for that one. She was fuzzy on the time that he came by at trial later.
Mm-hmm.
They believe he was with her at 5:45, and it's between 6 to about 7:05 p.m. that no one can really account to where he was.
Okay.
So he just kind of like disappears. No one can say where he was. No one can say that they saw Julia.
Right.
She was at home supposedly, but like no one can really say anything. He spoke to many people once he popped back up.
Which seems a little weird.
It does. He popped back up around 7:06. Now this is the night he's supposed to meet Qualtrol, remember,
mm-hmm.
at 7:30. So he was on his way to meet Qualtrics.
I was going
to
say.
He was like, I'm going to go meet him. He's a prospective client. Wow. I got to make the money.
That makes me nervous.
So he said he asked conductors of the tram about which tram to take to the specific address. He talked to ticket takers about this important meeting that he had. He kept talking to people. He talked to the people on the tram and kept saying how he was lost and he didn't live here. And so he didn't know his way around here. And if somebody could tell him where this address was. And he kept saying, I'm just like the new guy in town. I don't know where I'm going. Mm-hmm. And he just kept talking to people. And what people think later is that this could have been him being like, hi, hello, here's my alibi. I'm here. Mm-hmm. What's going on, everybody? You'll remember my face, right? I'm the guy talking about not knowing where I'm going. Right?
I'm that new in town
guy. Hey, and I'm supposed to be going to this address. Make sure you tell the police that later. Again, I don't know. Nobody knows. I'm just saying. That's a possibility.
I really like Wallace so far, so I don't want to hate him.
I know. I'm saying. So he changed from the four tram. I almost said train. And then it turned into train. So tram. It was a tram. He changed from the four tram and took the five tram from, was it Anfield? I'll never say it right.
I have no recollection.
Anfield to Menlo Gardens. Now, the first stop was Menlo Avenue. And a conductor pointed him in the direction of Menlo Gardens west and said it was likely around there that he would find Menlo Gardens east. But he said, I've actually never heard of Menlo Gardens east, only west. So he was like, but I imagine it's near the west. I don't know.
Yeah.
So at 7:45, so he's going to look for it. He can't find it. So at 7:45, he actually stopped a police constable and asked him for directions. Now, the police constable was like, yeah, I've never heard of that. Like,
I don't think that exists.
Yeah, he was like, I'm not really sure. And during this time, he actually talked to at least four different people for directions. He said he talked to seven different people later.
That would be a lot of people to ask directions.
But they only brought four, and they were able to bring four for trial to say he did talk to them. The first one was a guy named Sidney Green, and he told him the whole thing, and he said, okay, I don't know about east, but I know there's a west. And he said, maybe this person gave you east and meant west. So why don't you go?
Yeah, they just messed up.
Yeah, so why don't you go to that address, 25 Menlo Gardens
west,
and see if that's the person? So he did, and it was actually the lady that was living there was an elderly lady named Katie Mather. And she said, yeah, I don't know who Qualtra is, and it wasn't me who called you. So she was like, I don't know what to tell you. I've never heard of that one. So the constable he spoke to was James Sargent. And he said, yeah, that address doesn't exist. And so he said after that, Wallace just told him the whole story. Like, was just like, well, you know, I go to chess and I was at chess and this guy named Qualtra called my chess captain and he told me that he went through the whole detailed story and the constable was like, that sucks. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
So you could see that as weird, but have you ever like met somebody that just like continues to tell you things that don't matter and you're like,
Exactly. Uh-huh. So it's like, you could look at this as he's really trying to establish an alibi and he's trying to tell the constable every detail of this. So it's like really in there. So later this constable will be like, oh yeah.
Right.
Or he's just frustrated. He can't find this fucking address. He doesn't know who this guy is. And do you ever get frustrated and you're just like, can I just tell you why I'm frustrated? Like, I'm pissed and this is what happened today. You know,
maybe didn't want like the constable to think he was like a crazy person. Was like, sorry to like bother you. Like, this is what happened. That's why I thought this address was real.
There's so many things options that could be the reason for this.
Mm-hmm.
And you could go in any direction based on which one you feel like you want to lean on.
I don't want to be on Wallace's side if he's a murderer.
I don't know.
Oh, fuck.
You won't know. That's the sad part.
Great.
So he directed him. The constable did direct him to the post office and the police station. Was like, either one of those, you can go for like a directory and see if somebody can help you there. So he ran into a woman named Lily Pinches at the post office where the directory was. And again, she was like, no, that address doesn't exist. So after this, he was like, fuck it.
Definitely doesn't exist.
So he gave up. He was like, I'm not doing this. So 8:35 p.m., a woman named Lillian Hall, who is a 20-year-old typist, she said she saw Wallace with a man on Richmond Road, and they were chatting. And it was close to Wolverton Street, which is where he lived and where the murder occurs.
Mm-hmm.
And this was at 8:35 p.m. This will come back later, obviously, like Lillian just came forward afterwards. But that's just interesting that she said she couldn't say who it was.
A man.
Just a man. So 8:45, that's when he was seen by his neighbors, John and Florence Johnston. But they saw him, he was outside of his home.
Mm-hmm.
And they said he looked kind of flustered, and they said he appeared a little nervous and, like, you know, weird. And so they were like, you okay, William? Like, what's going on? And he said, I'm trying to get in my house, but all my doors won't open. He was like, they're all locked, but my key won't work.
That's weird.
And they were like, what? Like, that's weird. So they were like, are you sure? Like, are you sure you're not using the wrong key? And he was like, no, I'm not. And then he said, did you hear anything weird tonight?
That's a little bit weird.
And they were like, no, but right. Like, let us help. Because they have no reason to see. He's never been weird. He's never been violent. He's never been somebody they would have to, like, raise an eyebrow at before.
Well, and I say that's weird, but then it's like, it's not that weird because he's exactly. Like, did you hear someone, like, fucking with my locks?
Exactly.
It's not that weird, actually.
Upon first listen, you're like, oh, weird. That's weird. And then when you think about it, you're like, well, no, you might ask that, actually.
Yeah, like I might be like, did you see, like, anything?
My locks aren't working. Did you hear weird shit happening out here? Like, my wife's in there. I'm a little nervous.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's like, that's weird. So he said, so he told them, I arrived after being out since 6:45. I left Julia in here. The doors were locked. And he said, I couldn't open them with my key when I came home. And he said he had tried them all, the back and the front. So they suggested, you know what, let's try again. We'll help you out. We'll try to see what's going on here. And they walked towards the back door. And he just randomly said to them, she won't be out. She had such a bad cold. And they were like, okay.
But maybe he said that, like, something has happened here and she's still home. And
exactly.
I'm scared.
Like, I think... Again, upon first listen, you're like, that's weird. And then we're like, no, I think maybe he's running through it in his head. And he's like, she's not answering the door, but there's no way she's out. She has a bad cold. So right. He's trying to reason it in his head, like, why the fuck isn't she answering the door?
Oh, that's
she's
not that
in
weird.
There. So it's not weird, at least to me. So they both walk around back and they try the door. Click. It opens.
With
easily,
his key.
With the key.
Okay.
Now they said
that's pretty weird.
Well, and then they see that he seemed very, like, flustered and shocked by this.
Okay.
Like, that he was like, it didn't open before,
it
I swear.
It sounds like he's having, like, some kind of, like, mental break.
And he wasn't. He was very with it. Like, they said he was very clear, but they said, like, the door opened and he was like, it wouldn't do that before. Like, he was like, I swear to you, it didn't open before. Like, he was like, what the fuck? Like, they said he looked genuinely shocked that the door opened.
Okay.
So it was pitch black in the house.
Spooky.
So he does what you do in the 30s, which is light a fancy lantern, and he walked in his home. That's what you do.
Okay.
He called for Julia a couple of times, and then he came out a minute later, and they said he was white as a sheet, and he said, oh, come and see, she's been killed.
Well, you really can't control, like, if you lose color from your face, so...
No, you really can't. Of course, that could be that he's like, oh, shit, they're here now, and I have to deal with this and, like, put on a show. So it's like, you would definitely go a little white, because you'd be like, fuck.
Yeah.
And also, it could be that he is genuinely upset that he found his... Well,
this is frustrating.
It's also a little weird that, like, come and see.
Yeah.
That's a weird way to say that. Who knows?
Yeah.
Again, we're also going to be dealing a lot with somebody who is in a strange position. And it's like, you can't really say what you would say in this situation.
Nope.
Come and see is a little weird. I don't know. Like, come and see. Wouldn't you just be like, oh my God, I found her in there. Like, don't go in there. I'd be like, holy shit, don't go in there.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. So they went and they saw.
Yikes.
They found Julia on the floor in front of the fireplace, face down. And she had very clearly been beaten to death very violently head. Her skull was...
Which seems personal.
Certainly does. Her skull was bashed in, caved in. There was blood sprayed all over the entire room, some as high as 7 feet up.
Holy shit.
She was laying on a coat and in a large pool of her own blood. Her eyes were wide open and staring. And her right arm was outstretched above her.
Okay.
And her other arm was to her side, down by her side. Her dress had been partially burned, and it looked like the coat had also been partially burned.
Okay.
Almost like she must have, like, maybe fallen into, like, close
where
the fire was, and then maybe she was moved or rolled over there.
Mm-hmm.
Her brains were exposed on the floor.
Get the fuck out of here.
Along with pieces of skull. And William turned to his neighbors and said, "They've finished her. Look at her brains."
Oh, okay.
Which again?
But, okay, then the other thing is, like, a lot of times people who, like, love science, like, I don't know why I think of, like, Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory, but, like, you say things in, like, a way that, like, maybe I wouldn't, you know? Well,
that's, and maybe I'm thinking of, like, I don't know how to respond correctly in a highly emotional situation.
I probably
sound very, like,
weird,
off-putting sometimes. Like, that, I'm sure that can happen. But it's just because, like, my brain doesn't function well in these, like, very highly emotional. And I feel like
that's a very, like, science-y, like, right brain kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it's just, like, some people, like, that would be a lot for me. Yeah. Like, it would be a lot for anybody, but obviously, but, like, that would be...
You're not good at... I'm not saying it in a mean way. You're not good at emotions.
No, and my brain just wouldn't compute what's the correct thing to say in that situation. Like, socially, it wouldn't work for me.
I feel like a lot of times science-y people, like, when you say something, like, it's a little bit, like, harsh, and you're, like, somebody else would be like, oh, okay, that's very,
exactly.
like... It's almost like a doctor. Sometimes doctors will say something to you, and you're like,
bedside manner, okay. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know? And that's, because that obviously has happened a lot in my life, that people would be like, oh, shit, okay.
Yeah.
Like, that's, and
just
I'm like,
very blunt.
And I'm like, no, I didn't mean for that to come out that way, but I don't know how else to say this.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's frustrating. Trust me, it's frustrating for the person being that way, but I'm sure it's frustrating for everybody around them as well.
It's a very, like I just said, right brain.
Yeah.
Right brain. Totally versus is. Left.
So again, you're right. That's one of those things where that might just be he doesn't know what else to say but the obvious, which is, look, her brains are on the floor. Like, they really killed her.
Yeah.
Like, that's, who knows? And he might be, if he didn't do this, then he's completely stricken with grief and shock.
I will say, it is weird that he said they.
That's, and he does say, he says it a few things, like, they've finished her.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's just... Again.
Right.
It's one of those, like, they does imply that, like, he might know something else, but it can also just be him being like, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So they said he was absolutely white as a sheet and clearly in shock. He just kept saying over and over, they finished her. Okay. Over and over.
Yeah.
Weird thing to say.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, because if we're going to straddle on over to this side, that's a weird fucking thing to say.
Yeah, well,
and just keep saying it over and over. That's weird.
If I was there, I'd be like, you should probably stop saying that.
Hey, stop saying that.
I'd be like, maybe talk about, like, how much you loved her.
William,
and, like, how sad you are.
Maybe just, like, we get it.
Yeah.
They finished her. It's cool. Like, just
maybe, like, oh, no, my beautiful wife.
Like, you know, or, you know what? Or just shut up.
Shut up. Be forlorn in the corner.
Be
Don't be suspicious.
That's what you need to say to him.
Yeah.
Right? Don't be suspicious because you're being suspicious.
Mm-hmm. You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So Johnston, he and Florence brought Wallace out of the parlor and
good
away
plan.
From Julia's mutilated body. In the kitchen, they noticed that a cabinet had literally been torn, like the door had been torn off of it.
Okay.
And it was laying in pieces on the floor. And it was Wallace who actually first noticed it and pointed it out and was literally like, hey, look what they did.
My cabinet.
Like, literally was like, they did that. I didn't do that. Like, what is that? And so there was a few coins on the floor as well around it. And he said it appeared, he looked in there because they were like, you should check and see if anything's been stolen. And he said that about 4 pounds had been stolen out of the cash box that was hidden in there. So they were like, okay, cool. They stole stuff. So they had him look upstairs, which is a bad plan, but like, go off, Johnston's.
Yeah.
I suppose. Like, they were like, hey, you should go upstairs and go check more. And it's like, guys,
there could still be someone up there.
You don't know if this person's still in the house. And also, like, I don't know, just why don't you get the police here?
Yeah, maybe just call, like, another constable.
Like, I think they were all in a little bit of a shock, but like...
But that's the thing, you do silly things when you're like...
But like, just don't send him upstairs. Yeah. Don't do that. I just didn't think that was a great idea.
Hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah, so he went up there and he said he hadn't seen anything like strange up there. And he said there was actually a jar upstairs that was sitting right in the open with money in it, and it was still there.
That's weird.
So that's strange.
Yeah. Well, unless they just didn't go upstairs.
Yeah, exactly. So Wallace was shocked, clearly, and said something also to them about, like, the dishes in the sink, and how he said something, like, offhandedly, like, she didn't even have a chance to clean up after tea. Which,
like, why are you again, worried about that?
Could be looked at as strange, but it could be looked at as somebody who is literally, like, careening off the edge of, like, grief and just horror, being like, yeah, she didn't even get to clean up after tea. You know, you, like, you yeah, just think of weird shit.
Yeah.
So, again. Now, John decided, Mr. Johnston, he left to get the police and a doctor.
Good call.
Florence checked Julia, again, because she was like, I need to make sure that this is what it is.
She's definitely out.
Florence is, and Florence seems like she... like, really has her shit together.
Okay.
Like, I appreciate Florence. I feel like she was trying to hold everyone down here.
She's the machine, get it?
So, she is. And she said that she was still warm, but she said she was getting cooler. Like, she had felt her when they first went in there, and she was warm, and she said she was getting slightly cooler. But Wallace inquired about what they could have used to hit her. He was like, what could they have used to do this?
The fire poker?
And there was nothing that they could see that was used or could have been used. Like, nothing had blood on it. There was nothing there. So they were like, okay, they must have taken it with them or put it somewhere.
Yeah.
What they did find was spent matchsticks next to her and in the kitchen. So that's interesting. Wallace then noticed the coat under her was actually his coat.
Oh.
And when he noticed that, Florence said he started to sob uncontrollably.
Did he really love that coat?
I don't know. So she tended to the fire, Florence did, to keep Wallace warm. And it was in the kitchen, because there was another fire in the kitchen. And she tried to keep him comfortable.
Oh, and, like, Florence.
Just tried to, you know, Florence, everybody.
Trying to ease the pressure.
Florence. She's Florence Nightingale is who she is.
Oh,
look at that. So the Liverpool City Police Force finally showed up. They were known at this time... as a little bumbling. There was I'm gonna be nice. There was police strikes in 1919, and like that kind of really threw a wrench into their like effectiveness
for 11 years.
Well, they just couldn't get their shit together because like the police strike happened, then people were starting to get jobs on this force that probably had no business
and
getting
then
jobs
stayed there.
Then it's you can't just you're not gonna get rid of them. It's just becomes a problem.
All right.
It really does.
It's like you've dealt with it.
It really does, guys.
Let me tell you,
it really becomes a problem. So they were bumbling as fuck.
Okay.
So luckily the cop who showed up first here was at least like passable, so that's good. Officer Fred Williams, or Constable Fred Williams, he checked that Julia was dead, and then he asked for a statement. But the problem was he didn't record this statement right away from William. He didn't record it until an hour and a half later.
Mind might be a little fuzzy.
There's that.
At the
point. This is the statement that he recorded that William said.
Like, perhaps.
At 6:45, I left the house in order to go to Menlove Gardens, and my wife accompanied me to the backyard door. She walked a little way down the alley with me, and then she returned and bolted the backyard door. She would then be alone in the house. I then went to Menlove Gardens to find the address that had been given to me was wrong. Becoming suspicious, I returned home, then went to the front door. I inserted my key to find I could not open it. I went round to the backyard door. It was closed, but not bolted. I went up the backyard and tried the door, but it would not open. I again went to the front door, but this time found the door to be bolted. So now he's saying that he went to the front, it wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Went to the back, it wasn't bolted, but he couldn't open it. Went to the front, now it's bolted.
Okay.
So like, what the fuck? Like, someone bolted the door between you going from the back to the front?
And you didn't see anyone.
And you didn't
leave.
Say that to anyone before? Like, that's a little strange. So he
said... But also, did the constable just fuck that up because it was an hour and a half later?
Well, it becomes a weird thing that okay. Willie... So this is William's statement. He did say this.
Okay.
He said, I hurried round to the back and up the backyard and tried the back door, and this time found it would open. I entered the house, and this is what I found.
Okay. This is very, like Knives Out.
It really... Right? It is.
Yeah.
This is a straight-up
murder mystery
game.
It is.
Like, this doesn't sound real, but it's real. That's what, like, astounded me about this.
Yeah.
That's why you're getting a part two, because I can't stop, won't stop.
I can't quit you, murder case.
I'm only going to get you as far as him being, like, questioned.
Bitch.
And then we got so much more after that, but I just couldn't jam it into one episode. It would be rushed. So Florence did say that while he was being questioned here in the kitchen, that the cat appeared. Just walked in the door.
The cat came back.
Isn't that weird?
That is weird.
So two more cops showed up, and Williams had Wallace search the home with him. And he did note that the money was missing and that there was money undisturbed upstairs. So he put that down in his report. He said there was also handbags up there and a handbag downstairs of Julia's that had not been touched. Not been rifled through.
Right.
And that no drawers were open, which he thought was weird. If someone was going to be, like, rifling around, they usually leave the drawers open.
Yeah.
So, at this time, Constable Williams seems to take Wallace as calm and emotionless, he said.
But,
you know, he said he was very cool, very composed, very with it. But, you know, sometimes people in these situations snap to it and get... where they need to be when they need to talk to an authority figure or that's just how they process
or
it.
You might just be like really fucking shocked, so you're just kind of like,
and shock,
let me go through the
like
motions
that.
And like, then later when everybody leaves it hits you.
Exactly. And he's sobbed, he's coming up, he's gonna be on like a roller coaster.
Yeah.
But
he only
the other side
about
of that
his jacket.
Could be that he's only sobbing about his jacket because maybe he realized, fuck, I left that jacket there and that's really going to pin me to this.
Right.
So who knows?
Not me.
Too much. So when they asked him if he thought it was strange that the thief had taken money from the cash box and then put the lid back on the cash box and placed it back on the shelf, but left the door on the floor, he didn't have anything to say. But he said, sure. Like, it's strange.
Yeah.
But he didn't have any, like, answer for it. And, mm-hmm. of course, you wouldn't if it wasn't you. At around 10 p.m., this is where things get really kooky. So, at around 10 p.m., Professor John Edward Whitley McFall came to do some ME work.
Yes, he did.
Now, this dude is a legend in his own mind.
Oh.
But in reality, he's a big bowl of what the fuck.
Oh, I love that expression you just said.
He really is. He's a giant, giant bowl of what the fuck. He was a weird dude, apparently, who smoked opium, but was well known. He had various reviews about him. Some people thought he was, like, brilliant. Other people were like, what the fuck? Like, it was just one of those things.
Maybe he used to be brilliant.
Yeah, people who worked with him thought he was brash, very eccentric, but he was pretty smart. Just a lot.
All right.
He was the chair of forensic medicine at the University of Liverpool and was an examiner of medical jurisprudence at four other universities. So he did have a lot of credits to his name. This is when shit gets weirder. He just basically walked in, looked at her, touched her for a minute, noted the rigor, looked at the blood, and then he was like, yeah, she's been dead for like 4 hours. What? Excuse me, sir. It's 1931. 2021, you couldn't walk into a room and be
touch
like, she's
someone.
Been dead for this many hours. Like, no, no,
yeah.
No, that's not
this
how that
not
works.
This is not CSI Miami.
Didn't look at lividity, no observing that, no temp checking, nothing. Just boom, 4 hours because of the appearance of rigor. She has rigor in her face.
All right.
So I'm going to say 4 hours. And then they were like, yeah, the blood's clotting. So that works for me.
Okie dokie.
That's not enough, my friend. That's not enough. So, at the very least, you take the temp of the room and take her rectal or liver temp to get a core temp for her. That way you can use the formula that they definitely knew back then. They mm-hmm. knew this formula for body temp and like checking how long it takes your body to cool to ambient temperature. So you would use that formula to determine the cooling time and where the body has reached the temperature of his or her surroundings. Because your body starts cooling or heating, depending on where you are, the second you stop breathing. So it's trying, basically your body wants to make its way to ambient temperature, which in this case would have been the temp in the room she was found in.
Mm-hmm.
It goes about that by like, you lose like 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit every hour until you kind of plateau where the ambient temperature is.
All right.
Or if you're in a really hot place, your body will warm to that temperature. So you take that rectal or liver temp. Liver is a little harder, especially if there's a lot of wounds. You can't go into an existing wound to take the temp and you'd have to make an incision.
Yeah.
So a lot of times they will take the rectal temp for that core temp, but you don't care because you're dead. And they'll take that and you subtract it by the normal body temp, which is about 98.6 degrees for most of us, but that can vary. And you get that number and then you divide it by the 1.5, which is how your body cools or warms.
Okay.
That number that you get usually can give a decent estimate of time of death.
Right.
How many hours. Particularly in this scenario where the environment is pretty temp controlled because it's indoors
mm-hmm.
And we're not in the forest where the temp is like constantly changing and fluctuating. But unfortunately, her temp may not have been 98.6 because remember, she was sick. So she could have had a higher temp.
And was there a fire going?
There was a fire going.
At some point.
So it's like, this is going to fluctuate slightly.
Yeah.
And oh, she was partially burned.
Right.
So it's like, that temp could definitely messed up. But he didn't even try any of this.
He just knew.
Not only did he not even give it a shot, but like the amount of variables would have even made it hard if he had done it. But he didn't even bother. So for him to claim 4 hours based on rigor, which is also very variable on temperature, like cold or hot, how long it's going to set, how hard it's going to set, how long it's going to take to break, it's insane.
Yeah.
Because this room is a hot room. Of course, it's going to be different. You don't even take that into consideration. He didn't even give a range. He just said 4 hours.
Boom.
Now, 2021, they still are going to give you a range. It is so hard to pinpoint time of death. That's insane. Now, that would mean also that she was dead way before Wallace claimed to have said goodbye to her and watched her walk back into the house.
Yeah, so this motherfucker's wrong.
Because he was saying that that was at 6:45 that he said bye to her.
I mean, unless he killed
and
her
before
that.
And he's saying she's already been dead. But then he claimed that the blood that was clotting around her body and her head, he said that clotting indicated to him about 2 to 3 hours before that she was killed.
Okay, so
which
is
one was it?
Right.
Is it 4 hours? Because that's going to make her dead before Wallace left. Or is it 2 to 3 hours? Which
dead
is going to make
gone.
It, yeah, like...
Kind of a big variable here.
Pretty big thing here. But he's just like, yep, that makes sense.
Kind of like one of the biggest pieces of the pie yeah. that we need to solve the crime.
And it seems like he just took that like 2 to 3,
maybe
or
four.
I'm going to go with 4. Like, that's just... And he said at least 4. That was his thing. At least 4. It could have been more.
He said at least 4, but then said 2 or 3.
Exactly.
So at least what, motherfucker?
It doesn't make sense. And
stupid.
He also, he becomes an issue too with blood spatter soon, which we'll see. He didn't do a good job. Now, the detective superintendent was supposed to be on scene at this point of the police, and he was nowhere to be found. And by nowhere to be found, I mean, not only was he not on the scene, but when they called and were like, hey, can he come here? His name was Hubert Rory Moore. They were like, yeah, we don't know where he is. We haven't heard from him. So
what?
They ended up finding him in a pub.
Oh, no.
And they dragged him to the scene.
Oh, man. I feel like you should just, like, give him a cold shower first, at least.
Oh, yeah. The people that were there were like, he was clearly drinking. Like, he smelled
like inebriated, and he's like, what the fuck is that?
And they were like, he definitely shouldn't have been dealing with this murder scene. That's for sure.
Also, imagine seeing a murder scene in, I mean, ever, but in that state.
But in that state, it's like, and imagine being, like, in charge of that murder scene in that state.
I mean, no. Maybe that would sober you up.
I would hope it did.
Slightly, at least.
But he came and was basically came in and was like, shit. And he just, like, looked at William Wallace and was like, did you see anyone? He literally looked at him and said, did you see anyone when you got here?
I mean,
like, that was him literally being like, I'm going to give this a shot. did you see the murderer when you got here?
And maybe you just haven't said that to anybody yet.
I'm going to go out on a limb and hope that you just didn't say that you saw the murderer when you got here.
I mean, but is that a crazy question? Because he was like, yeah. The door was bolted, then it wasn't, then yeah. It was, then it wasn't.
Well, and he was like, did you see anyone? And he was like, nope. And the Johnstons were like, nope, we didn't see anyone either. And he was like, okay, cool.
He was like, now we got that out of the way. Let me think of my second question.
He's like, I'll be right back. So he goes back to the police station. And this is when he sent...
Where he makes himself a hot cup of Joe.
I'm pretty sure he was like, I need to take a cold shower right now.
I need some coffee.
But he sends a bunch of investigators to rooming houses, all-night cafes, tram stations, like lodging of any kind. And he says, look for people that are just hanging out with blood-stained clothing.
As they do after murders.
Which I love that kind of police work.
I love it.
All right.
Look for some people with
some blood.
I want
you to fan out. I want you to look for a guy that is absolutely
doused.
Soaked in blood. And if you see that guy, I want you to bring him to me.
Like,
okay. Okay, sir.
Who would stay in their bloody clothes? Da, 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 da.
All right. Dingus. So then he was like, all right, I got to go back to the scene. So
he's like, well, shit.
This is when our wonderful Emmy is looking at the blood in the parlor. And he's like, okay, there's a lot of blood here. And at this point, they were like, blood stain analysis is happening. So they were like, okay, we can do this. And they determined that she was likely sitting with her head. He said to her head... With her head to the side, talking to someone.
Sure.
Which, wowie. You got all that?
Yeah.
So he said he was sitting. They think that she was sitting on a chair, which was next to the fireplace.
Okay.
This is insane to deduce, but he did so because the marks they looked at were only about 4 feet in height. And they looked like what he referred to. They are not actually referred to as these, but in his report, he referred to these marks, these bloodstains, as soda water bottle marks.
What?
Apparently that's what he thought they looked like.
I don't even, what does that mean?
Soda water bottle marks. They were likely just, what I think is probably what they were, was elliptical blood spatter, which is like the elongated blood spatter.
Okay.
And they probably had, like, satellite trails that made them look like exclamation points, kind
of. Oh, okay. Is he saying, like, if you, like, open a bottle of soda and it explodes and gets on your wall, that's what it looks like?
I don't know what that means. Like, it's a very interesting way to say it. I've never read it said that way otherwise, but who knows?
The opium is telling him things.
So these particular little, like, exclamation point kind of marks... They will help to show what direction the motion is moving in, because the tails of those marks will point in the direction of the motion. So the marks they saw were pointing to the easy chair, which had not a lot of blood on it. So that's kind of a void pattern, which does indicate that somebody was in that chair when it all happened.
Okay.
Because that's a void where there had to have been something there
to stop the blood from spraying there.
They said she was likely sitting in it or on the arm of it.
Okay.
Or at least near it or standing in front of it.
And then do they look like exclamation points? Because when you, like, pull back?
Unfortunately, that's a problem. He didn't account for cast-off marks.
Yeah.
From blood flying off the weapon used. And those tails can help determine the motion again in that case. And you can count the amount of arc, which is when, like, they swing a weapon and it gets covered in blood and then it keeps swinging. I just like slammed it.
Yeah.
And then it keeps swinging. And when they keep swinging back and forth, hitting the person, collecting blood on the weapon, and then drawing back, it forms arcs, an arc pattern.
Yeah.
And you can count how many arcs there are and see how many times person was hit. But blunt objects. I hate to say that, but
that's really fucking cool.
It is cool. I love blood. Blood stain analysis, like, fascinates me.
It is really. I mean, it's crazy that you can do all that.
I used to want to get, like, really into that. At one point, I was like, I want to be a blood spatter analysis.
And you probably will be, like, in a couple weeks.
I said analysis, analyst. but blunt objects can also cause, like, a pretty varied size pool of blood drops. So... They think a blunt object was used to hit her, so that's going to change the kind of blood droplets, too, and he wasn't accounting for any of this. And so the angle of blood spray matters, too. So, like, a 90-degree angle hit will almost look circular, and as the angle decreases, it becomes more like it spines out, like the circle will look like spiny at the outsides. And eventually
the circle on the wall.
Yeah, like the circle splatter.
The blood splatter.
And as you move, like, so, and then it kind of like, as you decrease that angle, it's going to keep elongating into those exclamation mark kind of splatter.
Sounds like so physics, which I failed.
That's how you can tell. But if it hit the wall at a certain angle and then dripped, that can mess with the appearance and make it look like a different type of blood spatter, or that it was a different impact location or angle. He just didn't account for any of this and just went and was like, exclamation point. That means one thing and one thing only.
At that point, did they know that it meant more things than that?
They could definitely, they knew more. And it was more just a matter of like, you can't just look at that and be like, that's it.
Yeah.
Like you would know, and especially in the 30s, they knew that forensics and that this kind of science was highly variable and that you can't just look at something and be like,
that's
100% of the time, that's what this means. So he worked super quick. He sketched some of these stains and like droplets. He like sat there and drew them.
Uh-huh.
But I guess he drew them like really shitty and you can't even tell what they look
like. Well, at that point, why didn't he just take a picture?
Yeah. And then that's when he drops like, all right, so she's been dead for 4 hours. Boom. Nailed it. Like, that's it. He also said Wallace was too calm at this point, too. Like, mm-hmm. He also mentioned that. So it's like, this dude, I'm like, get out of here.
Yeah, like, shut up.
I don't know.
He's definitely, he has like small dick energy.
Yeah, I don't like him. He also at trial said that he described Wallace as, quote, too collected. And then he said, whilst I was in the room examining the body and the blood, he came in smoking a cigarette and he leaned over in front of the sideboard and flicked the ash into a bowl on the sideboard. It struck me at the time as being unnatural.
Why is that unnatural?
So, like, it's because he's smoking? Like, he's chain smoking probably because he's having a fucking nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
And the dude smoked. So it's right. Like, I imagine that's just something he
very
would do.
Normal thing to do in a, like, stressful situation is fucking pull out a square.
Why is flicking ash unnatural to do when someone dies?
Like, right.
I had no idea that once someone ceases living, that your ash has to just remain attached to your cigarette.
Why is that? What is that? Is he saying it's the way he leaned over him and ashed?
I guess.
But it's like, where the fuck else was he gonna ash?
And it's just like, can we just stop judging this people's guy after reactions. Finding his wife with her head butchered. Bashed open? Like, I agree that when it's like coupled with other things, you can definitely take things from it. You can deduce, you know, judgment from it.
Had he said something just, weird.
I feel like it's like he's getting shit on.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Now, more cops said that they were shocked by his behavior as well. One said he was just sitting stroking the cat at one point, and he said, quote, I didn't see any sign of emotion in him at all at the death of his wife. But again...
Right, sometimes you're unemotional because you're in shock.
I literally laugh at funerals.
Yeah.
Like, I will burst into laughing.
I have seen that with my own eyes.
I'm so incredibly uncomfortable. And it's because I don't know what to do with the other kinds of emotions, so laughing is just the easiest thing.
Well, and...
Everyone can get... And I can't imagine if it was like...
Someone you love so much.
I can't even put myself in that position.
No, fuck that. I can't even think about that.
I don't know how I'd act.
He also, like... You're comforting an animal, and he's comforting her animal. That makes sense that he was sitting there petting the cat.
It would make sense, and she was very upset about the cat the night before. So it's like, it makes sense that he would just be like, I'm just going to pet this cat, because it came back.
Well, that's also very comforting to pet a cat when you're stressed out.
Now, meanwhile, they're all judging him, but they're all just like a bunch of bumbling crazies walking around this house.
I know, I love that they're not judging the fucking police chief who was at the bar.
Now, no officer was really in charge at the time. Like, the superintendent was, but, like, he wasn't taking charge. No one is communicating what they're doing. So they're all just touching things and not recording things, or recording things that the last one just disturbed, and it's now in a different position.
There's no chain of evidence?
Absolutely none. It's mayhem in there.
Bonkers.
And in fact, the cash box that had money missing out of it had police fingerprints all over it.
Oh,
so
God.
They couldn't even pull any other police. They couldn't pull any other fingerprints off of it.
Well, shit.
So immediately Wallace, they're all looking at him like he's the main suspect.
The husband did it.
So they start asking about the doors and the locks to him again. They're like, go over that one more time.
Yeah.
Because they're like, that is weird. And he had said in that statement that the front door wouldn't open. So he went to the back, and the back door wasn't bolted, but wouldn't open either. So he went back to the front, and he said the front was now bolted. When they ask him about it now, They said that they tried that he tried the key in the front lock and it was a defective lock. So they tried it and they said, yeah, it is a defective lock. It's like broken.
Mm-hmm.
So the key works, but you have to like zhuzh it.
Sometimes it doesn't.
Like it makes it wonky. So he never said again that that door was bolted. He never mentioned that again.
Okay.
So they were like, well, you said before that. And he just wouldn't. He just like wouldn't acknowledge that again.
Okay.
So that's weird that he's not being like, no, what's weird is I came back around and that door was bolted when it wasn't a second ago.
Right.
He never said that again.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, like, had no explanation for that, which is weird.
Yeah.
Definitely weird. Because they were like, well, if that door was bolted when you came back around the front, you wouldn't have been able to unlock it either way, even if it wasn't wonky.
Yeah, no matter what.
Like, that's an important piece of information. But, again, maybe he was just in shock. Who knows? So then they ask him about the coat that she is lying on. Because mm-hmm. they said earlier, you mentioned that that was your coat. And they were, so they wanted to kind of like coax more information out of him. So they were like, is this your coat
mm-hmm.
that's here? And he didn't answer them. He just like sat there. And so they were like, is it her coat?
Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't say anything.
That's weird.
And they were like, okay. So they took this immediately as he knew he fucked up by using that coat and leaving it there and that he didn't want to incriminate himself.
It's really not that weird for your own coat to be in your house on the floor, though.
It's not, but I think maybe he was like,
overthinking.
They're thinking that he's sitting there going, oh shit, like I've admitted multiple times that that's my coat that she's lying on. Like,
yeah.
Who wouldn't think that that might like come back to bite you in the ass?
Yeah, yeah.
Then they just picked up the coat before it was photographed
awesome.
To look at it.
Perfect. Yeah, makes so, total sense.
Cool, cool, cool. And when they were done looking at it, they just placed it back down
as
where
one,
it was,
as
and they were
do.
Like, "That's where it was."
Yep.
He admitted again finally that it was his, and he said he left it on a hook in the hallway when he left that day.
Mm-hmm.
And he said what happened was, he said, "I was wearing that coat initially, but it's actually nice out today, so I changed into a lighter coat, and I put that on the hook."
Okay.
Makes sense.
Yep.
Now, around 11 p.m., our good old ME all of a sudden was like, wait a second.
Hold
and he
up.
Said, wait. I'm in the upstairs bathroom, and I found a small clot of blood on the upstairs bathroom toilet rim.
Bitch, like, she could have had her period,
well,
let's be real.
It was slightly streaked, and he said he was sure it was because the murderer had gone upstairs to wash up. This would obviously mean it was either Wallace, because he would be comfortable in his own home.
Yep.
Or a really stupid murderer who hung around for a while, washed up upstairs, but didn't steal any of the goodies up there that were all sitting up, like,
yeah.
right out in front of him. So likely Wallace. That's what it's really pointing to. It seems like everybody's trying to be like, oh,
wait
shit,
a second.
It's totally Wallace. So this could be true, because these cops were bumbling as hell and could have missed this.
Right.
Because the ME said that the dim light in the bathroom may have caused a shadow on that clot, and the clot was really dark, so it could have been obscured in that shadow and they wouldn't have seen it.
Yeah.
But multiple, like a dozen cops were in and out of that bathroom over the course of the last couple hours. They could have easily accidentally transferred it there.
Right.
Because there was no protocol that they were following.
And they're
all
touching shit.
And the ME could have transferred it up there. Who knows?
Yeah.
There was no other blood in the house anywhere else.
Right.
So it's very unlikely that they traveled around the home after the murder and didn't get blood anywhere else. But
only
just
on that one little speck.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. So at near midnight, the police medical officer, Dr. Hugh Pierce, came, and he was going to be kind of a second set of eyes.
Mm-hmm.
He examined the body, and he said she had been dead for 6 hours. So now he's tacked on a couple more hours. So it agreed with the idea that she was dead when Wallace said he had spoken to her and mm-hmm. said goodbye to her. So both of these
are
now
saying
that.
But also,
are
they just
that.
Trying to do that to make the investigation easier?
I don't know. That's the thing. So now he is brought to the police station to make another statement. He is not under arrest. But of course, everyone is outside now. They're seeing all the commotion. So now everyone's seeing the scene, and they're seeing him being led away.
So they're going
to... Rumors are starting to happen. Gossip is starting. People are saying they saw him in handcuffs. He wasn't in handcuffs. He was just coming to
going
do a statement.
Out.
He was not detained. He was not arrested.
Yeah.
So during his interrogation at the police station, he said that Julia would not have opened the door to someone unless she knew them personally.
Right.
He was like, I know that 100%. And she said she always entertained people we knew in the parlor. And when he was asked if anyone could have gained entry into the house forcibly, they were like, do you know anyone that would have wanted to hurt you or hurt her? He said, you know what? I do know someone that could have done this. And they were like, who? And he said, it was a guy I used to work with at the insurance company named Richard Gordon Perry. And he said, Perry, the motive that he was thinking of was, he said, Wallace had confronted him several times about coming up short on his insurance collections. Like, he would write down one thing and his money would be short, like he was stealing.
Yeah.
And this happened a bunch of times. And he said, Wallace had informed their boss, and Perry was fired because of it.
Okay, so that's a pretty good fucking motive.
So he said, Perry had been in his house before, so he knew the layout. And he said that he had actually been inside the house because when Wallace was sick with kidney issues, he kind of took over his route. And so he was in the house to, like, kind of give him all the lay of the land. And then he said he's actually been inside that cash box because he had to put the money in there after his rounds.
Oh.
So he said he's deposited money in that cash box. He knew it was there.
And it would make sense that he didn't go in, like, her purse or upstairs.
He was just going straight to that cash box. He knew. It makes sense.
That does make sense.
So Perry was brought in for questioning and, without prompting, gave an alibi of being with his girlfriend the night the phone call was made to the chess club.
And had he also, not been told about the phone call?
Exactly. He also gave an alibi for the night of the murders, but it didn't ring weird to anybody in the police station that he just offered up an alibi for the night before without anyone asking him
for it. Well, and what does the night before have to do with anything?
Exactly.
Perry.
So he's trying to say, I couldn't have made that phone call. Wasn't me. I wasn't Qualtrough.
Right.
But it's like nobody knew that, so it doesn't make
sense. The police were probably like, what phone call?
And at this point, alibis are kind of moot, at least for the murder time, because this ME was playing...
They don't even know what it is.
This ME was playing real fast and loose with forensics. Yeah. So,
yeah.
I don't think we...
To say the least.
I don't think we need to rely on that time of death so much. But remember Perry later, because we are not done with him yet, and you are not done with him either. Perry. But you know what we are done with?
The part episode. One of this I knew episode. It.
Hoo boy.
I don't know what to think.
Let me tell you, it's only going to get weirder and it's only going to confuse you more. Because in the next episode, we are going to talk a little bit more about Perry and what's going on with him. It's going to make you think a little bit more about him being suspicious.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to talk about the trial and everything after.
Obsessed.
So. Woo.
All right.
This case.
Guys, that was quite a case.
And quite a case.
We hope you keep listening because we're going to go over part two this week.
We are. We're going to come over and we're going to go over.
Part two.
So yeah,
we hope you keep listening.
And we hope you
keep
it
weird. But not so weird that you don't know who killed your wife and you don't know what you're doing as a medical examiner or a police constable. Bye.
Take the rectal temperature, everyone.
Don't ever do that.
Always do it.
Always put the thermometer in your booty hole.
Bye.
If you like Morbid, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run dark. In this new crime thriller, religion and crime collide when this small Montana community is rocked by a gruesome murder. As the town is whipped into a frenzy, everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager. But local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Lauro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. She and Ruth form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone's watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy Award nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook plunges listeners into the dark underbelly of a small town where the lines between truth and deception are blurred, and even the most devout are not who they seem. Chinook is available to listen to now exclusively with your Wondery Plus subscription. You can subscribe to Wondery Plus in the Wondery app, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify.